And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III.
251 episodes in. I don't know if that's a prime number. I don't know what we can do with that. I'm Louis Fertel. I don't do math.
Well, if you were Miss Jean Brody, you'd know.
She was not a math teacher, but that's all right.
Well, I never read it.
Her job in that movie, she's a teacher, but mostly what she does is she's come back from Italy, where she was over the summer, and she tells her students how fabulous and sex-heavy her time was there, and they idolize her for it. And so I think ultimately she was right. She's also a fascist, which is a complicating factor of her character.
Well, we love fascists. Adidas doesn't, but we do.
You say they're around right now, so they're having a moment, shall we say.
Anyway, once again, it's a slightly sad episode. I need people to stop dying.
I know. In a way, I like when somebody beloved, I don't want to say dies, but like we get to talk about them on Keep It. But after the Angela Lansbury death, which is about as like prepared as you can be for someone to pass away, now we've lost Leslie Jordan in a what we assume is a medical mishap that led to a car accident. And it's just so sad. I was saying to somebody the other day, there's that Angeline TV show where Emmy Rossum plays her. But anyway, Leslie Jordan is like the cool version of Angeline, and that you would see him all over West Hollywood where he loved to be. And he was as full of life as he was on Will and Grace in person. And there's just no second one of him. It completely sucks.
I mean, I famously loved his billboards that were always around too.
Always posing on a car. Yes.
Yeah. Now Leslie Jordan was, you know, lovely. And I feel like, there've been a lot of posts from people about how he helped get them through early stages of lockdown. Cause that's when, most people reverted to making online content. Not all of it successful, but for him, yes.
No. And also, it's like he popped off immediately. It took like one or two posts in lockdown and people just agreed, oh yeah, you have a kind of guileless effervescence about life.
Mm-hmm. And that also makes it feel like it was just coming from themselves, you know, because I feel like if you did it early stages of lockdown, you were just doing it from a need to connect with people. Obviously, once, you know, like he took off, once I feel like Z-Way took off, like other people started taking off, then it became, well, how are we going to use our camera to, you know, sort of get successful and get a lot of eyeballs on it while everybody's at home. But that, it just felt so very pure and natural. And also, he's so funny.
Oh my God. No, the line deliveries. And also, these stories he would tell. He's somebody like a Kathy Griffin and not many others these days, a celebrity who had a story about every other celebrity. And he loved to tell them. There was just a chatty vibe about him. And I feel like people are maybe afraid to say the wrong thing, so you don't see as many celebrities like that anymore. But he famously told a story about being on the sitcom It Had to Be You in the 90s, where the lead actress was Faye Dunaway, who, if you know anything about Faye Dunaway, maybe one of the more difficult people to work with in Western civilization. And he told a story about how she said, oh, Tennessee Williams is the only person who would ever call me Dorothy Faye. And he said, can I call you Dorothy Faye? And she said, no. And then he goes, what a crazy bitch. It was just fucking hilarious. It's just such a specific gay and out gay person. They're just, there are so rarely people that have been out that long too.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, one thing that a lot of people would be remembering obviously is Will and Grace, where he and Megan Mullally were just the reason to watch the show.
Yes. I mean, everybody on that show is masterclass, but the two of them were specifically fabulous. I was very touched by Megan's post about him. And I also just want to say that I looked through the comedy guest actor nominees because of this, because he won once for Will and Grace. Did you remember that Eli Wallach, as in The Ugly, from The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly, was nominated for Nurse Jackie at the age of 95?
I think you're assuming I watched Nurse Jackie.
Well, again, of course, Nurse Jackie could still be on. We have no idea. But Eli Wallach, we were putting him on Showtime at 95. I just had no idea. Yeah.
A lot of things happen on Showtime, okay? Yeah. I mean, I feel like when you wonder where someone's been, they've been on Showtime. Actually, right. During the interview today, we'll talk about who's on the show in a minute. The guests and I were wondering where Jane Kaczmarek is. And I was like, well, maybe she's on Showtime. She is not, actually. She actually has no credits since, like, 2019.
I remember Jane Kaczmarek, after Malcolm in the Middle, did some, either a season of a show that involved a courtroom. And then otherwise, I am baffled by it. You wanted more of Jane Kaczmarek.
She's a great Celebrity Jeopardy player. What do you think of Matt Rogers?
Oh, right. He was just on the other day. I watched that with all of our friends. And Matt Rogers was supposed to be there, but he had to go shoot something else. So we watched him. We had a viewing party for him without him, which makes you feel so desperate as a friend, I just want to say. But he did great. It started off, he had a couple of missed questions at the beginning, and I was like, I know you're going to pull out of this. And then he did. He almost won it. He almost beat John Michael Higgins. And now Joel Kim Booster, fellow Keep It alum, will be on, I believe, next week.
Oh, wow. They're going through the gaze. They're going through the streaming gaze, was what they're doing.
Right, so. Yeah. John Early, watch out, or whoever's next, yeah.
Well, John Early is busy being in Taylor Swift videos, and we will get to that today, because wouldn't be Keep It if we didn't talk about a new Taylor Swift album. And I actually have no idea what you think this time.
Oh, good. I mean, I barely know what I think either, but so we'll see. We'll discover it together.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about Midnights. And then also, our guest this week is a Keep It fan, and also the star of Interview with the Vampire, Jacob Anderson.
It seems like a doll. I could not be there for the interview, so I will listen later and, of course, send you my notes. But this led me to rewatching the old Interview with the Vampire, and this dovetails with our other topic, which vampires and werewolves we actually care about in pop culture. And I know you're going to have a bigger list than I do, because I have one that really comes to mind for me, but you will, mm-hmm. I think, take me on a larger, fuller journey.
I will. I'm excited to talk about vampires. I was watching a classic vampire film last night, which I will reveal when we get to our segment. But before we do that, since you weren't in the interview, I tried to do an impression of you for Jacob.
I'm going to go ahead and call Glad right now. Okay, go ahead. Lambda Legal, please help.
Yes, but we're going to deal with that after the interview.
Okay.
And see if I got it right.
Okay, very good.
So we will be right back with more Keep It.
Don't let Election Day sneak up on you this year. There's a lot on your ballot, and you don't want to get caught off guard. Vote Save America is here to help you figure out the who, what, when, and where of voting. How very Linda Ellerbe.
Use the tool to learn about every position, candidate, and ballot measure you're voting on, and build your own ballot to use as a handy voting cheat sheet. Next, you can find your times, places, and options for voting, and make a plan all in one place. November 8th. Election Day is your last chance to vote. Head to votesaveamerica.com to make sure your ballot ready. Taylor Swift's 100th album, Midnights, came out last Friday, and everyone is talking about it.
She's like Pearl Jam. There's like 7,000. She has her own Sirius channel. Yeah.
Well, with as many fucking versions of her albums at this point, it might be 100. Midnight's Taylor's version. Midnight's Reloaded, the re-up.
Right. Oh, there's, it's like Shania Twain's Up. Yeah. Red version. Yeah. Rockabilly version. Yeah.
So she released Midnight's at midnight. Thankfully, I've been on the West Coast for the past week, so the album came out at 9 p.m. for me, which, let me tell you something, is a beautiful blessing when things drop like this. Like, I was on the West Coast when Renaissance dropped. I love a 9 p.m. listen. Midnight is stressful.
Yeah. I feel the same way about when we get TV shows that hour, too. Yeah.
Yeah, except Netflix, though.
I've had this problem with them all. Yeah.
Yeah, had to wait till midnight. And then when I was going to press play on the final two episodes of The Mole, Taylor dropped Midnight's the 3 a.m. version with 7 bonus tracks, which is the definition of mole behavior.
She would be a good mole, honestly. Also, that was kind of a cool markety thing Taylor did, I have to say. The midnight drop is familiar to everybody, but to add a little something a couple hours later when people are already up and stirred up in the moment, I was impressed by that.
Okay. Now, are you impressed by the album?
Wow. Real masterpiece theater cadence there. Alistair Cook joining us. I will say this. I'm surprised to hear people say that they are getting sick of Jack Antonoff, because to me on this album, he establishes what I would call now a core Taylor Swift sound. Like, in a way, to me, she doesn't sound like anybody else but herself, whereas previous albums, you know, Red sounds like a bunch of other singer-songwriters. 1989, she's getting more specific, but on this album, he combines a lot of the elements of those albums, like the Zappers of 1989, the kind of warehouse pound of Reputation, and the kind of soft vibe of Evermore. And so I would describe this album as a kind of wintry 1989. It's sort of like a small pulsating snow globe. But I really like the production of it. The songwriting, I'm sorry, what is she fucking talking about anymore? I'm so, like, we're still on fucking Karma. We're still on I'm the Villain. We're still on I'm a Monster. It's like, it's an album about boring perceptions of Taylor Swift, and I need her to get a hobby.
There was a very funny tweet where someone wrote, in her 30s, still making first breakup music. Go sell some drugs.
Yes, right. It's very stunted to me. And again, now we have this, one of the music videos for, not Anti here, a Bejeweled, where she's, it's a play on Cinderella. Oh, God, you're post-grad school. Please move along. Stop. Oh, God.
I feel like that has been, well, one of my complaints about the visuals for Taylor's work for quite some time. It's almost regressed at this point, because when we got Willow and then Anti-Hero is very basic. And, you know, and then it's also Alice in Wonderland, you know, like this big Taylor in the house drinking a tiny
bottle.
With her
two references,
there's two
she
of
knows.
Her.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. There's, it's Disney and she's the villain, you know? What? And then Bejeweled, which is, you know, the Cinderella. And girl, who kidnapped Laura Dern and put her on that set?
It was not normal. I mean, like, yeah, she's there with the Heim sisters, and Taylor wrote that dialogue, right? Like, she wrote the video?
Yeah.
Just needed a punch-up. Like, it wasn't giving hilarious. I think, like, Laura could have given you hilarious, too. But then, of course, the video kind of gets totally away from the Cinderella thing. After the part...
Well, then she's just the Silver Surfer walking through space. So that part I liked.
Also, Dita Von Teese in that video, the second first thought casting of Dita Von Teese in the past 2 months, because we all remember Don't Worry, Darling. yes, I like where that video goes. But just, and we're getting a whole album of this, right? These videos are like coming up C- for an album where you would think like every video would be kind of crystalline and perfect.
I also want to point out that this album is very much Taylor returning to the pop charts. Very much Taylor, I want to be played in commercials, in movies, in stadiums again. Mm-hmm. You know, she wants children singing these songs at graduations, weddings, and funerals.
Yes.
And so it's very much going back to that you know, base point of Lover, of 1989, of Reputation. It feels like you said, like a mash of that, where I don't know. I feel like, yes, we have a signature sound for Taylor, but it almost just feels like we were getting something different with Folklore and Evermore, and I was ready for her to give us something different again. The album to me, as someone who is admittedly a Taylor Swift fan, feels non-essential to me.
Just like a mix of the previous ones, yeah.
Yeah, and well, and even like with newer stuff, like I love Glitch. I love Lavender Haze. And these are songs that she also made with Mark Anthony Spears, who is Kendrick's main producer since his first album. You know, so like she went to some hip hop for her trip hop songs. And those are good. But aside from Could Have, Would Have, Should Have, which is an Aaron Dessner song, and he's from The National, and I've loved her work with him because I feel like he gets her voice very well. Aside from that song, none of the other songs would crack even my top 10 Taylor songs. And so I feel like the album is pleasant to listen to. I've made like a playlist of my favorites into like a nice EP, but I don't think it's going to be largely remembered as a standout Taylor album. You know, it's just sort of, it's interesting thinking about an artist releasing an inessential album.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would kind of say the same thing about Evermore, though. Like, none of those songs to me stand out as like her top 10 or whatever. And on this album, I can think of a couple hooks I like, but I don't know. It's almost like she doesn't, as much as you say she wants to return to the pop charts, I'm not hearing, and it doesn't have to be like the huge pop hook of We're Never Ever Getting Back Together, but I'm not even really hearing like the elan of a song like Style, which is just completely, you know, a song you almost glide along as it hits the radio.
Bejeweled's probably the biggest pop-wise.
Right. Bejeweled is like a pretty good song. I don't know. You're right. It doesn't have just the like giant earwormy moment for me either. Even like Antihero, which I feel like is the song most people are getting behind. It was obviously the first video and stuff. Like
I like Antihero a lot, but the lyrics.
Yeah, right. It's verbose. Like it's just, and by the way, I'm an Alanis Morissette fan. So I love when I love a song when it's like six syllables too deep. I love that. But it's just like, ew, like a little bit like clunky. It's just not the kind of, you know, I feel like J.K. Simmons and Whiplash, like the tempo we love. I do also have to say, I am extremely sick of how every ninth Taylor Swift song is now about how she's an outlaw. Like the karma thing, the vengeance song, like the dressing for revenge.
Vigilante shit.
What? You have three Album of the Year Grammys. What? What? Stevie Wonder did not put out an album in 1978 where he's like, and by the way, I'm the villain. What?
I think that this is her like Scooter Braun moment. Like she's angry with him and that's where vigilante shit is coming from. But it's also, girl, you're winning.
Right. Let's move on to another topic. Please. I heard you.
You're not an underdog.
No.
It's like you truly haven't been one since Kanye took that award from you on the stage. And even then, you were an underdog for maybe 10 minutes until Beyonce gave up her time on the stage for you. When Beyonce gives you stage time,
right,
that means you are not the underdog. Beyonce doesn't even give her fans stage time, okay?
No.
I don't know where that bitch is. Partying in Paris or somewhere while we're waiting for visuals for Renaissance? Come on. Yeah, the whole anti-hero, like, I'm the villain, you know, like, and I'm tired of being put in this 1950s perception of what people think a woman should be is okay, but all of your videos put you there.
Right. You like that in a way. You know,
you like the
album,
Victory Project.
Anytime the album reminded me of Reputation, I was like, this is a six-year-old sentiment. Like, I just feel like you expressed it already. And let me just say, even songwriters I'm obsessed with return to specific motifs. For instance, Amy Mann, for example, I was just realizing almost on every album she puts out, there's some reference to being split in two and your halves don't cohere again. And that's just a part of like the mental illness thing she's obsessed with discussing. I have no problem with like returning to certain motifs, but in this case, it's like she's referencing a way we once thought about her that is in no way true now.
Yeah, I mean, The Weeknd is always rapping about cocaine and white bitches. So, you know, that is a motif that I'm happy he returns to. All of Michael Jackson's songs, like, there were constantly songs from him about being an outlaw. And, well, you know, like, he was constantly in court. So
that's just that legally true. Yes, yeah, right. Yes. fits the definition.
Janet Jackson is always making songs about orgasming. And you know what? I believe she does a lot.
Yes, right. No, if you're looking for a 36-second interlude where she coos three times and then there's an orgasm, Janet is exactly who you should be seeking out.
Yeah, but whereas Taylor, we're past the Kanye and Kim stuff, you know? And the Scooter Braun thing, as we said, you know, like, you won. So I just don't get this perception that she's the villain. But you know what? She is a Sagittarius. So, you know, she is constantly living in 3 days of the condor.
Right, right. Well, I will also
say, what they do.
I think a problem she has is just an obsession with relatability, which many artists at this level have a problem with. It's like how Barbara Streisand is constantly bringing up her childhood in Brooklyn, because that's one thing everybody has, a childhood, you know? So it's like, oh yeah, me too. I've had one of those.
Meanwhile, Lady Gaga, it's like, I'm just an Italian girl, you know, from New York City.
She's from Yonkers, right? No, I'm kidding. She said that was her least favorite lie about her.
Yeah, she's in Hello Dolly.
Right. Yes.
That's where Lady Gaga is. She's probably going to be Dolly at some point, by the way.
Oh, my.
I'm just putting that out there.
I can't believe you said that now, because now the dominoes are going to fall, and that's going to happen way sooner than it should have before. Hello, Dolly. How old is that character supposed to be? 104? Like, anyway, moving on.
She's older than the oldest profession.
Yeah.
Because Dolly is the HR department at for the oldest profession, okay? So that's how old she is. I would love for Taylor to get a little, you know, to give us a little Lindsay Lohan, you know, get a little bit more personal, raw.
Oh, yes.
And
which, whenever Lindsay does that, by the way, it's extremely worrying. So I wish she wouldn't, but go ahead. Yeah.
Tap into some stuff we don't know. One song I thought is fucking brilliant is Mastermind. Because that feels
I think that's my favorite song on the album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Once I got to the end of the album, I was like, okay, you made us wait for this one. This song is about, you know, it's about her relationship with Joe Alwyn, who is, you know, a perfectly sweet boy. They've been together for 6 years. He's a fine actor.
Loved him in The Favorite.
And he stars at Noon. He's good, you know, with that opposite that girl who's in the Tarantino movie who doesn't like to wear shoes. Like he was lovely. I get it. But this song was basically about how, you know, like she manipulated like the romance, you know, like how like she was the mastermind behind it all, like, you know, the like meet cutes and like the things like that. And I'm like, I like that song because it feels like her perception of herself that isn't distinctly tied to what she thinks we think about her. I think it perfectly actually kind of distills who she is with how she, you know, thinks about the charts and how she thinks about Grammys and how she just wants to win all the time. The Bejeweled song, getting the its video next, is even part of that. Because when you looked at all the songs that were charting, Bejeweled was separated between the other songs at the top of the charts, I believe, by Steve Lacy's Bad Habit and like Kim Petras's Unholy. And so, of course, she released the Bejeweled video, so it jumped up over those two songs.
Wow. Oh, she's Machiavellian because she cares, or whatever that lyric is. Which actually I kind of like that moment on the album. Also, did you notice in the video for Bejeweled, there's a part where the buttons on the elevator have colors associated with them, and fans decoded that it has to do with what albums she'll release next. And it turns out the next album, her 13th album, will be Taylor's version of Speak Now, which I actually am curious about because that is, I think, my least favorite album of hers. So I'm wondering what she'll do with it.
I like a few songs on Speak Now, but I don't return to it.
Right. Yeah.
At all.
I actually liked Mean at the time, but
I like Better Than Revenge too. You know, like I don't give a fuck about her slut shaming a woman.
Right. No.
Come on.
The way she slut shamed Abigail in 15, never forget. Also, again, Better Than Revenge. This is a topic she is still obsessed with 175 years later. Who are we getting revenge on? Moving on.
I would love to hear, honestly, about not that I think an artist should talk about their failures all the time, but, you know, it is a thing that a well that you go to as an artist. She keeps trying to act.
Right. I actually thought she was fine in Amsterdam. I thought she was fine in Amsterdam. Mind you, it was a 30-second role. Yeah, I did.
Oh, I'm sorry that you endured that film.
No, everybody was doing their ye old barbershop quartet acting, and I sat through all, I believe it was 5 hours long.
I'm sure it was longer for the actors having to spend any time on set with David O. Russell. But that movie, Cats, she was in Valentine's Day, and they all are like spectacular disasters.
Right, and you didn't even bring up The Giver, which is one of the worst literary adaptations ever.
Well, you know, because it wasn't giving, you know?
Lois Lowry's comment was, it's not giving. It's called The Giver.
Give her something else to do. But not this film. So, you know, like, what is drawing her to that? You know, is it just because, like, I'm famous, so I guess I should be in a film? Like, you know, my team says, do this film role. Or does she really want to be an actress? Or, you know, I want to know more about that, you know? And she loves rom-coms or romantic dramas, at least. She's talking about, like, Kramer versus Kramer and shit at the film festival when she was talking about the film she was watching before this album. Which, by the way, this album doesn't even feel like Kramer versus Kramer, a marriage story. Like, it doesn't feel like any of those things.
No, absolutely not. No, she definitely still thinks she is living in a freeform original dramedy about high school romance. And I just want to say, it feels like that was canceled in 2016. Let's move it along now.
I'm thinking of, what's that show? A Pregnant American Teenager? The Secret Life of
The Secret Life of the American Teenager. Molly Ringwald's own, yes.
Yeah. The Secret Life of Taylor Swift is the TV show. And we're on season 17.
Yes, right. No, the original cast has moved on. Now, yeah, et cetera. I can't stop thinking about her watching Kramer versus Kramer. That means she knows who Jane Alexander is, and that makes me uncomfortable, because Jane Alexander is for us. Watch Testament next. That's about nuclear apocalypse. Write an album about that.
Well, I think we fully exhausted our Taylor conversation.
Yeah, I like the production. By the way, I think her voice sounds really good on it too. And I think her voice continues to sound better and better per album. I'm not interested in what these songs are about anymore. I think she continues to return to this pool of, I don't want to say melodramatic topics, but just like the same three things she's been writing about since like album one. I truly just would like her, like, literally just write a psychological profile of somebody who has nothing to do with you. I just find that to be more interesting than the let's obsess over this weird YA universe I still continue to live in. Just doesn't do anything for me.
Well, that's why I liked, you know, the one to a Folklore and Evermore, because that, like, she was writing stories that weren't about her.
Right, there were,
you know,
a couple,
like,
in
Last
there.
Great American Dynasty, you know?
But then she buys the house in that too.
Yeah, that's true. You know, she inserts herself into the story.
Right.
Like all true artists do. I do lastly want to shout out another album that came out this week, which is not, you know, not getting enough attention. But Meghan Trainor.
Shut up.
You know? A potential mother.
Yes. I want to say about the Carly Rae Jepsen album. To me, it's a 3.5 out of 5. I love certain songs on it, namely Shooting Star, which is, I've always called Carly Rae Jepsen Smiley Minogue, and now it just sounds like Kylie Minogue. That song looks like it's from X.
It's an epic song. I love Shooting, like instantly I love that song. I would give it probably that too, because I feel like the songs that I love on it are some of the best songs that she's ever made. But the ones that I skip are really boring.
And I'm surprised, because I feel like she's just is best when she's super bubblegum poppy. And I'm surprised she still wants to live in this sort of lazy river space, which Western Wind sort of hinted when she put it out. But like Talking to Yourself, I love Surrender My Heart. And her vocals sound great on it too. I really regret that I didn't get to see her recently. Mysteriously, I went and saw Jessie Ware in concert, who was awesome, but I didn't get to see Carly Rae Jepsen.
Oh, good. Are you ending your Jessie Ware vendetta?
I didn't say that. I think the album is still a little slow. I still think it's playing in the bathroom at the disco and not at the actual disco. But live on stage with the choreography, it was a slay.
I thought Jessie was fucking fantastic. I thought Carly was fantastic. It was truly a tough week. There was a lot of Tetrising that needed to go on if you were gay, because Carly Rae Jepsen was Tuesday night, Jessie Ware was Monday and Tuesday, Lil Nas X was Tuesday and Wednesday. I saw all three, but it was a lot of choreography, as it were.
I'm gonna say. And I assume rehab next. So a lot of that coming up for you.
Yeah. I'm actually recording this from Promises.
Does Promises still exist? I think of that as such a 2007 destination.
As far as I know, Promises is still around. So
also Promises, you know. Phenomenal Kylie Minogue song from the album Body Language.
Oh, we love that album.
Yes. Taste.
Anyway, when we're back, we are joined by Jacob Anderson from Interview with the Vampire. And believe it or not, he really loves this podcast.
You know, certain people are just wrong, and he's one of them.
You know him from his breakout role as Grey Worm in Game of Thrones, and now he's back as the star of the fantastic new series, Interview with a Vampire. I'm thrilled to welcome to Keep It Jacob Anderson, who, for some reason, listens to the show.
I love this show. I'm very nervous. I'm very vulnerable. You have all the power here. Let's go. No, seriously, I absolutely love you guys, and I listen to this show every week. I'm just sad that there's one episode I'm not going to be able to listen to now.
This
at least
one?
The middle section. This one, yeah.
Do you not like listening to yourself or watching yourself back?
TV? I like to watch myself back. And it's not just, I think it's not just about me. It's just when you're on a set and you see how hard everybody's working, it just feels very rude to not, like, to not watch it back.
Okay.
But it can be quite excruciating sometimes. I don't like listening to myself back.
Okay. You have such a lovely voice, though.
Thank you.
But so maybe it's because, well, this voice, okay. Maybe it's just because I'm American, and so, you know, a British accent always sounds better to us.
I feel like you're always in England, though. I don't know if I'm...
I was at a wedding in Oxford this year, so that's and it was like a couple weeks that I was there, so maybe that's why it seems like I'm always in England.
You're just like a European king. You just travel around Europe. You have very European sensibilities.
Maybe it's like vampire sensibilities. I am actually going to, I'm going to Prague for Thanksgiving. It's the first time going there. So have you been?
I've never been. I hear that the alcohol is cheap and the buildings are pretty. That's what I know about Prague. Yeah.
All right. Good. I will look forward to old buildings and cheap liquor. So let me ask you a bit about this series, Interview with the Vampire, which is great. And also people are loving it online too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't like, I don't really know what to do with, like, people have been really nice about the show. I don't really know what to do with that. Like, my instinct is that I go, want to be defensive about something. And I'm like, well, I don't really have anything to be defensive about. People have been really nice. And I'm very proud of it. I got interviewed the other week and I did the thing where I got asked what it was about. In fact, it was the interview where I talked about this show and I was like, I feel like the way that I can describe this show is it's just a vibe, which is never a way to describe a show, especially not on a press tour.
A lot of shows are just vibes, though, I will say. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean it like Insecure was a vibe.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of shows, it's not, there's not a lot of plot going on. It's not Rings of Power, you know, or even Game of Thrones, where I have to remember, like, there is so much going on. Who are these people's names? It's like, you tune in and it's, this is what you're going to get each week. And I love the vibe of, I don't know, it's New Orleans and it's, you know, it's vampires and, you know, there's, it just feels fun to watch. And it's been a while since there's been a vampire thing on TV that I feel like I've cared about, maybe since True Blood.
Wow. So this is, would you say this is the one that you like best since True Blood? Or have you seen?
Yeah. You know, there's like, and it feels very True Blood, you know, there's like a lot of gay shit going on. There's just people floating. there's a lot of murder.
We do be floating. We can give you that.
How do you prep for a series like this? You know, like, have you been to New Orleans before? What's it like to work on this accent?
Yeah, I'd never been to New Orleans before, but weirdly, as soon as I touched down, I was like, there's just something very familiar about this city. And it really reminds, I'm from, do you know a place called Bristol in the UK?
I've heard of Bristol, but describe Bristol for me.
So Bristol is, it's a very artistic city. It's the home of like Banksy and Massive Attack, Portishead. Tricky's from Bristol.
Okay, trip hop so city.
Like, yeah, trip hop city. It's a vibey city. but it also there's like a lot of like slavery was prevalent in that city. It's like a port city. So there's a lot of ugly history there, but also like a lot of black people, and just It's weird. It's like a joyful place that has kind of it's very sinister history behind it. And it's almost like people just are choosing to live on and celebrate each other. So I felt really at home in New Orleans. But in terms of prepping for this job, I was kind of like, I don't know how you really prep for this. Like, apart from learning lines, I just like, I made sure I learned the interview all the way through. What did I do? I did a lot of running because we did nights. The whole thing's nights. I was like, I need to have my stamina up. So I thought running would really help. I was going to try like the Matthew Knowles training camp, like running on a treadmill and saying my lines at the same time. But it's harder than it sounds. And yeah, the accents really, because it was 1910, I spoke to a few people that had ideas about what the accent should be. And it was like this sort of French Creole thing, but it was like made up because nobody really knows how anybody sounded in 1910. So I just listened to people. Like I listened to like cab drivers and people in stores and just soaked it in like that. Because I feel like I wanted it to be recognizable to people now in New Orleans as well.
Yeah. I hate a night shoot, for the record. which I feel like if you're doing a show like this, though, you have to sign up for it. You know, because like vampires can't be in the daylight. So it's always going to be a lot of night shoots going on.
I think I didn't quite bargain for what it would actually mean to make this short. Like it was I think we did like 80 something nights, consecutive nights barring Sundays, and I think I was like, oh, we're gonna do stuff inside and that's gonna be on stage and that'll be okay, we'll do that during the day. No, nights.
So are there a lot of stages or are you shooting in homes there? Like sort of what's the setup like in New Orleans?
It was a mix. The Pointe du Lac estate is a real place, which is now used for, I think, weddings and events and stuff. I'm not sure if it is a plantation house. I mean, my guess is that it is.
I'll ask Blake Lively if it's where she got married. I'll ask her. she's got a list of them. It is really weird wandering around there and just seeing like beautiful homes and then being like, oh no, this was also just a plantation.
Yeah. It's a constant feeling of being like, oh wow, the majesty. And then seconds later, you're like, oh, yeah, okay. Right, we're going to walk on. I don't really want to walk around. We shot a lot in New Orleans, in the city, and then the stages were just outside in Chalmette. And they built built two blocks of city streets outside what used to be, not a Kinko's. I'm not very good at my American stores. It was like one of those big department stores. It used to be one of them. Begins with an L. Is this interesting?
It's interesting. Lewis would have better probably department store knowledge than me. I don't know if that's shady. I feel like he would. He'd at least recall it. Shooting this show, how is this different than it was shooting Game of Thrones? Like, what was the process for that show where there were 7,000 more people in the show, but I feel like your scenes within Game of Thrones were very contained?
Yeah. What were the differences? I think, this was, Interview with the Vampire was much more intimate. It was because really for a majority of the time, it's just me and Sam or me, Sam and Bailey doing these kind of very domestic scenes, which are also loaded with all of this like vampire murdery shit. not to undermine the whole thing, all of that vampire murdery shit. It was all quite domestic. So I guess that was quite different in terms of scale. Game of Thrones was always like every day the scale was mad. But we really bonded. We had like a little, we had a little crew with Natalie and Amelia and then later Conliff and Peter. It was nice. It's just everything was pretty hectic on Game of Thrones all the time. Whereas this was hectic, but it was like internally hectic and it was 3 a.m. every day, all the time.
Tell me a bit about working with, your co-stars. I mean, you have Sam Reed, who is fantastic as Lestat. And then you've got Eric Bogosian, who has been in everything. Yeah. So, you know, and those are the two people you're opposite the most. So, you know, what are they like working with?
Well, Eric is amazing. He's like, Eric, he'll start talking to you about, like, he'll be like, oh, I did this movie with Steven Seagal. And you're like, Under Siege 2, I know. And he's like, he'll just sort of, he'll throw out these sort of flippant references and allusions to things he's done. And you're like, yeah, I know what talk radio is, Eric. Like, and he's just so casual about it. And he's just one of those people that, like, he has a story for everything. He's met everyone. There's a Basquiat in one of the rooms in the show. And on Eric's first day, he came and sat down on the sofa and just went, oh, I met him. I met Basquiat. Yeah, he was a cool guy. I was hanging out with Debbie Harry and Basquiat and in New York, and, you know, they couldn't keep up with me, those kids. And you're like, who is this? What's going on? This is so surreal, so bizarre. He's like a real life vampire. But he's just like very charming and brilliant, and I love him. And he's kind of like a surrogate father / grandfather. Let's say father, let's be kind. He's like become that. He's like very and Sam is just like my partner in crime, and I feel so lucky that I got to spend every day with him. Like, we had to do a lot of stuff in this show. Like, when I say a lot of stuff, I mean, like, those nights are no joke. Like, knowing those scenes and working on those scenes together at that hour, like, you can only do that with somebody that you like. Even if the scene it calls for, like, tension, I think you would just kill each other if you didn't like each other. It would be the most recorded amounts. I don't know. There'd be a book. Somebody would have written a book about whoever played those parts if you hated each other. I don't know, actually. maybe there already is a book.
I always feel for him because, I don't know, whenever you do a period piece, you know, it's like how I also feel for, like, people on Game of Thrones too, right? Except for your character, because you got to be bald. you forget, like, how hot some of these people are in person because the wigs and everything that's on them. I'm like that, you know, he's got that hair every episode. But, you know, it looks good on him.
He is now Sam's hair. He now has that hair. He's grown it out.
He grew it out.
Yeah. And sometimes it's a little bit alarming. Sam, are you in there? No, but he ties it up and it looks cool. But yeah, the hair is crazy in this show. I mean, I have a conk. I never thought in my life I would have my hair conked for anything. And it was a process. But but my hair's healthy. It's all good now.
Another thing I really appreciate about the show too is, like, it starts out with your family, so it really takes, you know, these Anne Rice novels, which, you know, are very you know, Southern white heavy, with all this Christian lore in it, and then sort of makes it about you and this Black family in New Orleans, and, you know, sort of what happens to you when you're ripped away from that world. And it discusses, I feel like, you know, race and things in a way that the books didn't before. Were you familiar with, if not the books, the original film? And, like, did you have opinions on Interview with the Vampire? Or, you know, just vampire stories in general and how they've sort of always been told?
Yeah, I hadn't read any of the books before I auditioned for the show. But then I read the first and second book just before the shooting. I read the first book after I read the script. And I was very shocked to learn that Louis in the books is a white plantation owner. And there's some stuff in the book that I was a little uncomfortable with. But reading the script, and actually before I read it, I think I was like, I was just a little bit worried that it was going to be a case of like, okay, we're remaking this this film that's based on a book, and there's like 10 of them on TV at the moment. And they're kind of going, well, the difference is going to be that the lead character is black or a person of color, but they weren't going to change anything about the story. So I kind of had the fear of colorblind casting, and was just like, was really pleased to see that it's a part of what makes this interpretation so rich and so truthful, is that it leans into it. And it's like, well, what, I don't think it changes the character an awful lot, but it, I think it just imbues it with more, more texture. And it also is the time that the story is set. I think if Louis wasn't black, it would be weird, because it's New Orleans, like in the 1910s. And yeah, in terms of getting to know the family as well, it's like, you need to really understand what Louis has lost when he becomes a vampire. And I yeah. this is maybe one of the more incomprehensible interviews I've done, Ira. I'm really sorry. I'm just slightly tripping out that I'm talking to you.
This is great. Oh my God.
All right, let me be honest with you.
How did you
AMC
first?
AMC are not going to be happy with this. They're like, "What were you talking about, Jacob?" This is like,
they'll be fine. I got AMC Plus for this, so you know, I gave them a subscriber, and I don't know what else I'll watch on it. Probably just rewatch Mad Men.
Yeah. Well, what else have they got? Let's buy some of the goodwill back. What other brilliant shows did AMC have to offer?
You know what? I've been meaning to watch Better Call Saul, so I can do that too.
Better Call Saul is great.
Yeah. Okay. It's a blind spot for me. I have never seen that show, but I loved Breaking Bad.
It gives you a similar thing, but he is. Is it a different beast? And it's kind of, there's something comforting about knowing that, like knowing where he's going, having like a very clear, you're like, oh, this, I'm growing to like this sleazebag rather than like, I like, it's the dad from Malcolm in the Middle. Oh no. It's not.
You know what? I always forget that he was the dad of Malcolm in the Middle.
I never forget. I watched it initially.
I love Malcolm in the Middle, but I would say that, you know, I always think about just Jane Kaczmarek.
She's so brilliant in that show. Where is she? Yeah. Was she? I want to watch her now. I want to see her in everything.
Jane Kaczmarek seems like she might have stopped acting. A bit. She was in the show Mixed Dish. She's done like a bunch of like, she's gotten like a bunch of guest appearances up to 2019. And the last, one of the last movies she was in was, I was literally talking about this movie with my friend last night. Chips. She was in Chips. The movie version of the
Dax Shepard's.
Yes. And Michael Pena of the 1970s TV show Chips. Why I was talking about Chips, I have no idea. I truly don't. It just came out in conversation, and I was trying to remember what Chips stood for. And that's, we started talking about this film, but she was in that.
What did you find? What were your findings? What's Chips?
Yeah, Chips means Coastal Highway Patrol. California Highway Patrol. And I was then baffled that the I and the S mean nothing.
They're not incorporated into the name.
No, they're not. So
they should have called it.
It's just a cutesy title. So I won't be revisiting Chips to see Jane Kaczmarek's work, but I hope that she is. I hope she's well, and I hope she's you know, doing something else.
Also, everything isn't acting. I'm sure she has a rich life outside of outside of that show and outside of Chips. Yeah.
Malcolm in the Middle was on TV for years. She probably has a very, like, actually rich life. Yeah. You know? She's got money.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
And it's still on, by the way. Malcolm in the Middle is still syndicated. I will, like, I'll turn on, like, TV sometimes, and I will see it on. So she's doing well. Jane Kaczmarek is doing well.
Shout
I'm
going
to file
Jane
that
Kaczmarek.
Away to find out what she's up to. She's exactly the kind of person who would be on this show. So it's our last one. I last want to ask then, how did you discover Keep It? And what critiques do you have?
What critiques do I have of what do I have like critiques of Keep It?
Yeah, of Keep It.
Do I have a,
of
yeah.
us?
Oh, this is a big question. Well, I found it because somebody else told me about Love It or Leave It, and there was a mention of Keep It on that.
Mm.
So I went back to it. So I started listening to Keep It during the first part of lockdown.
Okay.
And all was dark and cold in the world. And you guys were just like a bright and consistent light in a very dark and gloomy tunnel. And
thank you. That was like our, I feel like that was our renaissance, you know. Right. Once we got Jane Fonda on the show, then
that was the moment. That was the it was pretty good, to be fair. I went back and listened as well to everything that I'd missed. So I was all the way up to date, and then just joined on after that. And I don't think I have any criticisms. I think you guys are doing the Lord's work. I think it's just like you have a real way of being open and honest about how you feel about all kinds of pop culture fuckery. But I also feel like there's a level of commentary and knowledge that you and Lewis have that you feel like you're learning as well. Like I don't really enjoy social media. I just don't know how to do it anymore.
I don't either.
I don't either,
but I'm drawn to it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like I'm off. It's like I occasionally go in and like creep, and then I'm like, no, I need to leave. I need to leave. I need to get out of here. So I don't like, but I'm outside of that. I'm outside of that that like instant thing. I don't get like the instant gratification that most people get when they like look on Twitter and they know exactly what's going on in pop culture. But I was like a heavily latchkeyed kid. I was like completely brought up watching TV and movies and listening to music. And so I have this kind of like innate thing that wants to know what's going on, and I want to see everything and I want to know everything. And you guys just have like a perfectly balanced way of articulating not only how you feel about what's going on, but it feels fair. Even when you're harsh, it always feels fair and deserved. And I just really enjoy it. You guys are, we've never met. This is the first time we've met, but I feel, I feel very connected to you. And is this weird? Is this the weirdest guest appearance you've ever had?
No, it's not. Also, speaking of music, like you have two albums and they're quite good.
I do. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
You should sing in more things.
Do you think? But I'm not like a sing. Like I'm not a belter. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
like,
you don't have to be Cole Porter, but you know.
Is it like? I love singing, but I love singing as a means to exercise myself with an O, exorcise myself, and basically just get all of my shit out of my brain, and then I just sing it because I don't really want anybody else to sing it. It's more that kind of thing. But I'm sure
Your album is like trip hoppy too, you know. So is that because you're from where like Portishead and Massive Attack is from? Is that what you listen to? Is that what you grew up on? Or
maybe some
was that just how you were feeling?
I think it's just like, I feel like Bristol is the kind of place where nobody's ever gonna like call you out for being into like for wanting to make music or wanting to be an actor or do art or whatever it is that you want to do. Nobody's going to find it strange that you mix genres. And I feel like trip hop just seems to be like a Portishead album, for instance, is really difficult to categorize. And it sort of feels like something that could not only come out of Bristol, because I guess there's people are doing that now all over the world, but I just never really stuck to a genre. I like all kinds of things. And I think that's like reflected in how I write songs and my taste.
Okay. Good. Well, you know. Oh, Cary Grant's from Bristol.
Cary Grant is from Bristol. He's got a blue plaque.
there's a plaque in the city for Cary Grant.
There is, yeah. See, I bet Lewis is sad that he missed this now.
Yes, because you know what, Lou,
we could have talked about Cary Grant.
Let me try and pretend that I'm Lewis for a moment. You know, Cary Grant, one thing about him is he's just like, he has an intense sort of face, but he's so funny. And he's really one of the funniest sort of leading men that we started with in the golden age of Hollywood. And then he, you know, say something about how great he was with Katharine Hepburn in bringing up Baby and Rosalind Russell and His Girl Friday. And I would be like, and I would make a joke about His Girl Friday because I always reference His Girl Friday on this podcast for some reason. And people have called me out about it. But I love bringing up Baby even more. And I'd probably make a joke about, you know, like the dinosaurs that they, the dinosaur bones that they climb on at the end of the film. And then they fall and catch each other, which is one of my favorite endings of a rom-com. But then I would talk about how much I love him in his Hitchcock era. Because like Suspicion and Notorious, like To Catch a Thief and North by Northwest is iconic. So we would probably have like a Cary Grant off. And then you would just, you know, be amused with us doing our annoying thing in person.
it's like he was in the room.
and I would try to surprise him actually with a random Cary Grant film, because I always like to, you know, like throw one out that he wouldn't expect me to bring up. And I'm like, which one is that? You know, because I'm mostly a Hitchcock Cary Grant person, but
a really good base knowledge of Cary Grant.
Like, I do.
It's strong.
An Affair to Remember with Deborah Kerr.
Okay.
Yes. I would bring that one up. And he would probably tell me some other films that Deborah Kerr is in, and he like knows everything about her. But that's where we'll leave it. Jacob, this was wonderful. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much, Ira. And honestly, I speak for everyone, for all of the listeners, when I say thank you. Thank you for the music.
Oh, thank you.
The songs you're singing. Thank you for all the joy you're bringing. No, honestly, it's like, it's a real balm for me listening to this show. And I appreciate
you. Thank you. And it's a joy watching you on Interview with the Vampire. It's really such a lovely show. And I'm glad that you're on it and that I got to watch it and I got to keep watching
it. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I probably should have told people to watch it a little bit more here, but
oh, you know what? It's fine. It's watch good. Interview with the Vampire on it. AMC. Interview with the Vampire is out now on AMC.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no-bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vitor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vitor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's Jon Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that. I'm deeply
doesn't
stupid.
Doesn't sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Lewis. So in the interview with Jacob, I brought up Cary Grant. Because he is from Bristol, England.
Oh, of course.
And so, yeah. So he's from Bristol, just like Jacob is. And so I brought up, you know, first I brought up his rom-coms that I love, Bringing Up Baby and His Girl Friday. Because one, I'm always making a Rosalind Russell reference on this show for some reason. And then I talked about Katharine Hepburn and their chemistry. And I talked about him and... you know, the dinosaur bones at the end of Bringing Up Baby, which is one of my favorite moments in cinema.
Yes, there's many. Philadelphia Story, Penny Serenade, I love him in, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then I talked about, obviously, like the Hitchcock films that he was in. Because I feel like you would have talked about actresses he was opposite, and I would have talked about the Hitchcock films. But then I also brought up, I tried to bring up a film that I felt like would be a curveball that I like him in. And that one was
Charade.
The one with Deborah Kerr. An Affair to Remember.
An Affair to Remember.
Yes, but I could not remember. I remember now, obviously. I could not remember what else Deborah Kerr was in. And then I was like, oh, after we record, I was like, From Here to Eternity.
Yeah, and The King and I. And no, she's one of those people who's really beloved by... classic movie fans. She never won an Oscar, but just a kind of dependable, regal presence. It's like if Greer Garson had a soul. That's a deep cut for the kids out there. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Who would you have brought up in terms of Cary Grant?
Oh, God. Well, I would have brought up Penny Serenade. Let's see. As an actress, has he co-starred with?
Yeah, I just feel what would have come to mind if he said he was from Bristol, England, and then I said, oh, Cary Grant's from there.
Oh, well, I mean, I could have read you the entire Wikipedia. I would have brought up how his name is Archibald Leach and he was a circus performer. So
I did not know that about him.
Yeah.
All right.
And also he lived he lived with Randolph Scott, this guy, for like 15 years. And they were known as like bachelors together. And everybody wonders if they're gay. But then also he was married long after that to Diane Cannon, who is still with us, 2-time Oscar nominee. And in fact... one of the rare actresses who was nominated in another category besides acting because she directed a documentary or a short or something that was nominated. I have to double check.
I'm looking her up and I have seen Bob and Carol and Ted and Alice and
one of my favorite movies. Yes. Yeah. I can wait. Yes. Beautiful actress. She used to be at Laker games all the time. It'd be like Jack Nicholson and then also Diane Cannon.
Yes, I knew that name because our friend Sam Grossman, who loves the Lakers, would always point out Diane Cannon to me when we saw her. So
she's around.
Anyway, in light of Jacob Anderson joining us this week, I thought it might be nice to revisit some of our favorite depictions of vampires in film and television and books and whatever. And you know I have a bunch, so I want to hear yours.
Okay, well... I'm going to go real simple. My favorite vampire is original recipe, Bela Lugosi as Dracula, which I feel like people know is a reference and can kind of summon the vibe and maybe even a couple of the lines of the Bram Stoker adaptation. But when you watch it, a couple of things are great to me. First of all, Dracula is, or Bela Lugosi is just a straight up regular looking Hungarian dude. There's no real like intrigue to the way he looks. He doesn't look like a classic film heavy or villain. He's just sort of like, I don't know, normal guy looking, except in this case, pale and wearing a vampire costume. But when he's interacting with Renfield or Van Helsing, he is really, really scary. And the timing of the horror in those movies, like when he's waiting to lunge or turning away once Van Helsing flashes across at him, is very sophisticated. I know there are like huge fans of horror movies from the time, the Universal horror movies and stuff, but I really think it's underrated how chilling those movies are. I mean, this is from like 1931. This is like 8 years before Gone with the Wind, for example. So for them to nail it so early on in cinema feels like a crazy feat to me.
You know, he does a lot of hands work as Dracula.
Yeah, which by the way, again, that's very, yeah, faggy. That's faggy.
Yeah,
so, you know. And I feel like there should be an element of like the queer going on with a vampire. You know what I mean?
Well, that is interesting that, you know, I brought up like the hand thing, the queer thing, because I rewatched Blackula this weekend.
And how did that go?
Which, honestly, it's fantastic. You know, for people who don't know, it is a blaxploitation film from the 70s. And the plot of it is that an African prince visits Count Dracula and demands that Dracula help him stop the slave trade.
This is a documentary.
Yeah. And Dracula says, no, slaves might think it's barbaric, but the people who own the slaves like it. And so
it stands to reason, yes.
And so he turns the prince into a vampire and locks him in a casket for centuries. And then he's awoken in the 70s by two faggot interior designers.
Come on, the 70s. That's exactly what we want.
They are swishing about in Dracula's castle, talking about how this is the find of the century. They get the casket, you know, like take it back to Los Angeles. And then Dracula rises and kills them. Blackula rises and kills them. Also, I want to say that when he's turned into Blackula, Dracula bites him and puts him in the coffin, and he says, you will be cursed with, like, you know, an eternal lust for blood. You'll never be able to have it because you'll be trapped in this coffin for eternity, which is interesting because I feel like if you didn't have blood for an eternity, like, you just wither and die at some point, you know?
Right.
But he says, you will also carry my name with you wherever you go. And he doesn't call him Dracula, which is his name. He calls him Blackula. So got Dracula it. Comes up with the name. very interesting.
Yeah, Dracula should work in advertising. He's like, yeah, look at this pun I've come up with.
And then he starts, obviously, you know, like chasing this woman around the city who looks like his lover from, you know, the 18th century, which always happens with Dracula, right? You know?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Doesn't understand lineage and descendants. And, you know, as soon as he sees someone who looks like his old lover, well, that's a wrap. I mean, that was Winona Ryder in Bram Stoker's Dracula, directed by Coppola, which is a gorgeous film and beautifully directed and so boring.
I was going to say, do you know what I find boring? Interview with the Vampire, the original one. Mm. I love Tom Cruise in it. Love his performance. Anything that's like deliciously kind of Norman Batesy is such an unexpected move from him. I think it really pops out in his filmography as a strange choice for Tom Cruise to make. But and of course, Kirsten Dunst is exceptional. Actually, Tandy Wayne Newton gives a great performance in that movie. But otherwise...
Shout out to her husband, by the way. Old Parker.
Right.
What a name. But he directed the fuck out of Ticket to Paradise.
Right, yes. Which I still haven't seen yet.
You know what? It's pure innocent fun. It's just a fun time. It was a fun Sunday afternoon and gave me nothing more, nothing less than I expected. And I thought it was a perfectly fun time at the movies.
Now, does that mean, like, let's compare it to another 3-star Julia Roberts movie like Notting Hill. Is it worse than that?
Well, yes, it's not Notting Hill.
See, okay, that is important to note. So you have to accept that you're getting a level of schlock, but it is worth it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's so fun seeing her and George Clooney on camera again, you know?
I am loving their interviews recently. They did a thing for TCM where they were talking about their favorite old movies. And in fact, at one part, they're asked, what movie of each other's could you watch over and over again? And Julia Roberts goes, oh, Syriana. So funny. Come on, Julia. Julia is that bitch. I do not want anyone naysaying Julia ever again. She is the top. Yeah.
I want her curly hair back.
She is, it is laying a little flatter these days. You're right.
Yeah. No, they're fucking amazing together. And honestly, and Lucas Bravo is very funny in it too.
Mm.
So Billy Lloyd doesn't get a lot to do, unfortunately. But
and she was in Scream Queens, which reminds me of vampires. Yes.
Yeah. Which is also coming back, by the way.
When we're rebooting Ryan Murphy projects, I feel like we've fallen off the edge a little bit. I don't know. Yeah.
You know, like when Beyonce and people like, you know, like when a pop star blanks out their social media pages and updates them, right? Apparently Scream Queens did that, but removed Fox from its bio. And I'm like, do we need a Scream Queens reboot in our lives?
Also, that's a show that secretly had quite a few seasons, right? Not a lot, but like three or something.
No, it only had two. It had two.
Oh, really? Because we added Kirstie Alley to that, right? And Jamie Lee Curtis?
Kirstie Alley. Jamie Lee Curtis was there from the beginning. We added Kirstie Alley and Uncle Jesse.
John Stamos?
Yes. That's his name.
Shocking miss from you right there, but yes.
Okay, you know what? Rebecca Romaine and I have blocked his name out, okay?
Okay.
Let us rest.
Let me rest is still so fucking funny to me. Anything happens in the news, you just get to respond, let me rest.
That is me with the... And I'm sorry, if you were a person who is still tweeting at me and Lewis to discuss the Don't Worry, Darling press cycle, I'm done.
Also, my God, we put out an anthology. Jesus Christ.
I mean, and now the fucking nanny is releasing her diaries. And I do
call
not...
Call ScarJo.
I do not... Like, it was fun hearing the story about Jason Sudeikis, you know, jumping in front of Olivia Wilde's car. It was funny hearing about her secret dressing recipe that's really just Nora Ephron's dressing recipe from Heartburn, allegedly. Yeah. But
a basic vinaigrette, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. There is too much going on. I do not need to keep hearing about what's going on in these people's lives. Not unless there's a movie attached.
I think in the next week for Halloween, something I'm going to see a lot of is that Florence Pugh purple outfit with the Aperol spritz. I think we're going to get a lot of that costume this year.
Yeah. And you know what it won't be, though? It won't be Valentino.
No.
So why bother?
Oh, no, it sure won't be. No.
Yeah. Unless it's like Heidi Klum doing it at that annual Halloween party that she always has.
And that's when I have my yearly nightmare about the assistants who work for Heidi Klum and they're putting together like... Oh, I need to call blank. I need to call Moschino so she can get her fucking fishtail tailored or whatever.
Make it work. And then they do a fake laugh with her. And then they're like, shut up, bitch. It's not funny anymore. How many times do you think she said, make it work to Seal before he was like, I've had enough?
I would love to know if that's how it went down. If she was trying, if she also graduated from on-screen talent to producer, like she did on Project Runway, and she was trying to produce The Marriage, and it all went awry, which arguably is what happened on Lifetime.
I would say, to get back to our topic.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, you know, we know how much I love, you know, like a Buffy, etc.
Yes.
We talked about that. We talked about True Blood before. But I think that one of my favorites that I don't think we talk about that much is The Lost Boys.
I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. You don't like Kiefer?
I love Kiefer in Stand By Me, where he is menacing and bone-chilling as the older brother of Will Wheaton. But no, I'm not that educated on Kiefer. My icon from that era is Martha Plimpton. If Martha Plimpton was in a movie from that time, I'm really into it.
Okay. Both icons of Fox.
Yes. She raised hope you know, for all of us.
And we got to see an entire day of Kiefer Sutherland's life. So right. There's that.
Now, I have a question. Wasn't there one good Twilight movie? I forget which. Eclipse, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the third one, because I went to see the third and the fourth one in theaters, because at that point it had become, like, everyone was psychotically talking about Twilight, and so I went to see them. So I saw the last two films, and they were insane. Yeah. But I never saw
really
the first two.
It seems unforgivable.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unforgivable that this was fanfic. No, wait. This wasn't fanfic.
50 Shades of Grey was fanfic.
50 Shades was Twilight fanfic. And then that became a phenomenon too, until I feel like the movies just sort of petered out.
Right. Twilight is just... We talk obsessively about how Avatar is a phenomenon that had no legacy, even though we're about to get another one that everyone's about to see. But weirdly,
we're about to get 50.
I feel like Twilight has also fallen off. It lasted for so long, and they won every MTV Movie Award in sight. And Kristen Stewart, I think, would like dissolve into a puddle if you brought up that movie series to her right now. But like, it lasted for the longest time, and now it would be so gauche to discuss even. Like, who's sitting around still obsessed with, like, they're still obsessive Harry Potter fans, you know? But there's not, I don't think, an obsessive Twilight contingent.
Lewis, baby, the Twitter lesbians are going to come for you.
Well, look, they're already after me after this Taylor review, so don't you fucking worry. The Jill Gutowitz army, they will find me. Yeah.
They love Twilight, okay? Like, they love it.
And the next thing they should love is themselves, because it's not good.
I also would be remiss if I didn't mention Blade. So,
oh my God. That was almost like my idea of what a vampire was for a long time. That came out when I was probably 9 or something.
Yeah. The shower scene in the club with like the blood falling down while everyone's dancing is like brilliant still. So... I mean, even Bebe Rexha paid homage to that in her Sacrifice video.
Cineast.
I couldn't even say that with a straight face. I couldn't even get that out with a straight face.
But by the way, again, this goes back to my problem with Taylor. That's at least like an interesting reference. Make like the, if you're going to make a reference to something pop cultural, find something that isn't mined to death, you know? Like Bebe Rexha, I applaud you in this regard.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure other people will share their favorite vampire films with us, things that we missed. You know, someone's going to be like, you didn't bring up vamps. And I'm like, I sure the fuck didn't.
Guys, we're over here trying to give Amy Heckerling credit. We're not trying to tear her down. Okay.
Yeah. But I don't know. There's From Dusk Till Dawn, you know, if...
John Carpenter's Vampires, which I was watching when I found out Aaliyah died. That puts you at a moment in time.
Queen of the Damned.
Oh, Queen of the Damned, yes. Which, you know who I always call Queen of the Damned? Ricky Martin, because he, at that VMAs, said, the winner is Aaliyah, and then she died the next year. And I was like, I believe you cursed her. You're the Queen of the Damned.
And let's not forget the many Dracula adaptations like Dracula 2000 starring Vitamin C.
Oh, yes. Nickelodeon music exec or whatever she was for a long time. She might still be, vitamin C.
No, she was a Nickelodeon music exec, but I believe she now is like an interior designer.
Oh, damn. I thought she was still like soundtracking whatever reboot of Rugrats we had.
That's someone whose life story we need to dig into on this show. We need vitamin C on Keep It. I have a lot of questions.
Vitamin C and Bonnie McKee. Are they the same person? Check in next week. We're going to do that research.
And does cortisone cream get rid of the itch that vitamin C had?
Really dumb. Thanks for that.
Have another one. And is she still friends with the people she graduated with? Because friends forever? I'd like to know.
I gotta say, in retrospect, I have to be honest, I'm doing the math, seems like a lie. We tell ourselves lies in order to live, you know. That's not what Joan Didion said, but that's what she meant.
She was talking about vitamin C when she wrote that, obviously.
Oh my God.
All right.
We are sorry.
Yeah. Play it as it lays in the sun and gets and soaks up all that vitamin D.
Right. Slouching towards Bethlehem because of that scurvy. Yeah.
All right. When we're back, keep it. And we're back with our favorite segment of the episode. It's Keep It.
Me, Lewis, I'll go first. My Keep It goes to something I saw on Twitter a lot, especially as it pertained to the death of Leslie Jordan. People would begin their tweet of remembrance with, "I'm not usually affected by celebrity deaths, but..." First of all, what a big masculine man you are. Wow, I can't get over how amazing your emotional strength is, that you simply... If a celebrity dies, you feel nothing. To brag that you feel nothing, great. I don't know what that instinct is to, I don't know, shame people for liking celebrities or thinking they relate to them, or like shaming the idea of a parasocial relationship, which I just did with Taylor Swift and her fans, of course. But I don't think that's completely normal to be like, the lives of celebrities, if I'm a fan of them, doesn't affect me at all. Like, I don't think by saying that, you're emphasizing that the real relationships in your life actually matter to you, which I think what they think the implication is. To me, it just sounds like you're callous and want other people to think you're callous, and there's a certain strength in that. And I just don't believe that. And also, it doesn't add strength to your remembrance of the person you're remembering. Like, I don't read that and then read what you have to say about Leslie Jordan and think, oh, your emotions are so amazing and intact and well articulated. To me, it's, you need to be congratulated for not feeling much of anything. But in this case, you're going to make an exception. Well, thank you so much for deigning to express a real sentiment like the rest of us functioning human beings.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like this thing where it feels like I'm cool and I'm above it all, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about celebrities at all. But this person like really affected me. And also, I'm also letting you know that this is the one celebrity that I think is cool and worth caring that they died.
Yeah. Right. Oh, so you suck. Great. Thanks for the keen insight on the human condition, you fucker.
I also want to point out the morbid thing of passing by where Leslie Jordan died.
Oh, which is right in the middle of town. It's Hollywood, right?
Yeah. Well, it's like, it's my route to the gym. So, like, the street was shut down. I didn't know what it was. And then later I'm checking Twitter and I see that that's where he died in a car accident. And I was like, that's just very dark to know.
Well, also, it was weird. Like, TMZ reported it first. And I remember reading it. And it said, he died in a car accident Monday morning. And it was still Monday morning. Like, I understand that's the world we live in, and we've been living in it for a long time. Still weird to be like, oh, I guess I'm just going to pass it now or whatever. I work in Hollywood myself. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's one of the things. And this is This goes into my keep it, I guess. You know, I guess we're just bad at social media this week.
Sure.
One of the things I saw this week was basically someone writing, they hate when TV and film, they can tell that that dialogue in it was written just to be screenshot and shared on social media. And all of the examples in this thread are just quotable pieces of dialogue. And I want to know, what do you think writers do?
Right. They want people to think it's funny.
Yeah, we did. Or like they want people to think that it's like meaningful, you know? Do you think that people just came up with quotable pieces of dialogue when social media was created? Like you just referenced earlier, you know, we tell each other lies in order to live. You know, like Joan Didion was like, can't wait till that's on Tumblr.
Yeah, that is a little bit puzzling. I guess the implication is it feels to them like somebody who does ad copy came in, wrote some jokes, and then left. You know, a Twitter strategist came in, wrote their idea of humor, interrupted the flow of what was going on, and left. But obviously, writers want people to think the thing is funny. So if they write sort of in a popular voice, wouldn't that just make sense?
Yeah, I feel like it maybe goes to what we talked about with Paul Reiser last week, too, about the idea of how I'm mad about you. He said that they didn't sometimes put a joke in because it felt a little too jokey and like not something that the characters would actually say. But dialogue has always been quotable. And I feel like it's people who grew up on social media now thinking that people are writing specifically for things to be on Tumblr or to be a GIF. And I'm like, in a way, yes, because you want people to remember the things that you write. But like, we were in high school when people were like sitting around lunchrooms, like quoting Anchorman and Seinfeld episodes, you know, like people have done this for years. People always quote dialogue or like a quote or something that they like. And like, that didn't come to fruition with social media.
No. Oh, I distinctly remember half the men I knew in my life up until around 1999 when I was in middle school. Your entire personality could be quoting The Simpsons. That was your entire sense of humor. Please. I'm still recovering. Because, by the way, The Simpsons is a show where a lot of the very funny lines in that show need the context of the very specific nature of that show. Like, people would just, like, quote something in a character voice. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, is that funny? I don't know what you're talking about. But
Purple Monkey Dishwasher. What does that mean?
That's what I'm saying. Yes. Right.
Also, shout out to Straight Boys in high school for making me think that Boondock Saints was a good film.
Oh, we cannot go down this path because the amount, excuse me, I was an RA from 2006 to 2008. This is a little bit after what you're talking about. And I would arrange movie nights for the guys on my floor to be nice, you know, to pretend like I did my job. What these fuckers would have me sit through. First of all, Boondock Saints. Second of all, Smokin' Aces. Bitch, do not put me in front of Alicia Keys in a thriller again. Do not.
I think I've defended Smokin' Aces on this show before.
Oh my God. Well, I blocked that out for my own mental health. Gentle fuck.
Speaking of Alicia Keys, you know she's got her whole, you know, like no makeup thing.
Yes.
But people were making fun of her this week because she tweeted, about to make my vegan, gluten-free, dairy-free, sugar-free pancakes, and them things are good. Don't hate. And people are like, you're about to eat a blueberry?
That reminds me, there's
what's
an
left?
I'm actually about to be the middle school version of myself and quote Daria. There was Quinn, the younger sister on that show. She has the fashion club over. I think it's her who says it. She goes, oh, my no fat, no butter, salt free popcorn is ready. And all the other girls go, Very funny.
Honestly, anything Tiffany in the fashion club said would send me into hysterics.
Yeah, Tiffany's such a good character. Well, I of course love Sandy, who is one of the true cunts of television. Quinn, are you actually going to be wearing that? Yeah.
Also, I mean, we always talk about the teacher with the bulging eyes,
Mr. DiMartino. Yes,
Mr. DiMartino, but I want to shout out to the principal. What's it, Principal Lee?
Oh, I love Angela Lee on that show. Drunk with power. Yes.
truly drunk with power. And I remember one of my favorite episodes was a season premiere where she had the school sponsored by a soda brand.
Yes, amazing.
And the soda brand was everywhere. Truly, everyone on Daria was, like you said, like a lot of them were just cunts and they were so funny.
Yes. Angela Lee, principal of Lawndale High. By the way, has enough been said about the fact that the fashion club in that show grafts perfectly onto the Plastics in Mean Girls? Like Sandy is Regina, Stacy is Gretchen, and Tiffany is Karen.
I don't think we have, really. I mean, I'm sure it exists somewhere. Someone at Wesleyan wrote that paper.
I don't know that I've never ever put that together before. I feel bad for me.
Yeah. Daria, still one of the funniest fucking shows on TV and probably where I got a lot of my sense of humor from.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Daria was Garfield for closeted gay middle schoolers. I think that's just the truth.
Yeah. And I think that goes to one other thing that someone tweeted, where it's just sort of like, so there's always someone tweeting something like referencing like an old film or like an old scandal. And it's like, social media would have gone crazy if it were around when this thing came out. And it's, have you heard of the phrase water cooler show before?
Right.
People used to discuss.
People talked about television.
Yeah. Television, films, other things that, like celebrity scandals. Like we talked about them with each other in person.
Yeah. It wasn't just a quote tweet sent out into the ether. Fucking Chad.
But like it could be, because you could talk about something like at a party or at school or something, and then the amount of people wanting to chime in because they want to talk about it too with like-minded people was like astounding. Like I truly remember in high school, the OC debuted with like a 8 episodes in the summer, and then when we came back to school there was a math class, or like I went to an all-boys school too, you know? Like there are football players in the classroom talking to me about Ryan and Marissa because they wanted someone to talk to about it.
Right. It's weird to think about being behind on shows at that time, what you would have to do to actually catch up with them. Like that's around the era when like things would be released on DVD. But even before that, I'm not saying, for example, Seinfeld, you needed to see every single episode. But like if you wanted to see all of it, I guess you just waited around for reruns. It's really shocking.
Wait around for reruns, or you just wouldn't watch it, you know? I feel like that's why we had previously ons. That's why they used to really be useful if you missed something, because I feel like people were, I mean, you look at ratings for like some of the most popular shows on TV, like a Melrose Place or something, and people would, you know, just miss an episode if they had to, you know?
Yeah.
But you would just watch it in 2 weeks when it was on, and maybe you'd catch the one you missed during the summer, but it wasn't that big a deal. I feel like previously ons for TV now are because of shows like a Glee or like a House of Dragon or something, where like so much fucking shit happens in an episode that the next week you have no idea what happened last week.
Right. It's not connected at all. Yeah.
Previously on such and such show really used to be for the people who like didn't see last week's episode, but were tuning in this week.
That really helped me during my obsession with Lois and Clark. Yes.
The Adventures of Lois and Clark, the original.
Yes. Terry Hatcher, by the way, was just in a, I think, North Hollywood version of The Addams Family, as in the musical The Addams Family. And I want you to know that I will go to my deathbed regretting not fucking seeing that.
Okay, well, I'm very angry at my friend Chris for not telling me that Terry Hatcher was in this. I would have gone to North Hollywood to see Terry Hatcher in Addams Family, the musical. I just thought he was seeing some school production that a friend of his was in.
And you know what? It might have been, but it had Terry Hatcher in it.
All right. Well, now I'm sad. Anyway, that's our episode this week.
I hope you enjoyed the fangs coming out for Taylor Swift.
Thank you to Jacob Anderson for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week. Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our senior producer is Kendra James. Our producer is Chris Lord. Our executive producers are Ira Madison III
and Louis Fertel.
Our editor is Charlotte Landis, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer.
Thank you to our digital team, Matt DeGroot, Nara Malkonian, and Delon Villanueva for production support every week.
Hey, so listen, whether you're in the States, across the pond, or somewhere on the other side of the world, we love that you tune into Crooked for US News. But did you know we also have a UK news show? Yes, that's right. It's called Pod Save the UK.
Pod Save the UK is a no bullshit, unabashedly progressive conversation about politics focused on the issues that matter most to the people of Britain. With all the changes in our government, including the fun revolving door of prime ministers we have here, there's always lots to talk about.
And there's lots of fabulous guests to talk to, journalists, politicians, experts, comedians and activists.
Yeah, we've had great comedians on as well, like Rosie Jones, Stuart Lee, Aisling B. We've also had Tommy Vietor on, who may be our boss.
We still don't know.
We're not quite clear on who our boss is. I thought it might be Tommy Vietor. I thought it might be Jon Favreau. I don't know if it's John Lovett. It's hard to say. It's not clear to us who our bosses are.
Some of our listeners call us irreverent but not stupid.
I object to that.
Sound,
I'm deeply stupid.
Doesn't sound too bad. So look, come check us out. Come join us. Pod Save the UK every Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.